Hello, I'm Father Benedict Rochelle of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal in the South Bronx. And this is the first of a series of 13 programs that we're starting today on meeting with Christ or encountering God or His Son in everyday life. It should be an interesting series. It's a topic I've been interested in all my life because along with being a priest, I happen also to be a psychologist. And the area of psychology that interests me the most, obviously, is the psychology of religious experience, the psychology of faith. A great many people in our world want an experience of God. They want to know that God knows who they are, that they are real to God. They want to know God is there, that there is something to hope for. And as a matter of fact, there are probably a great many people who are watching this program right now who have had powerful personal experiences of God. The great psychologist Dr. Gordon Allport of Harvard University, who wrote some years ago a book called The Individual and His Religion, said that the most powerful validation and reinforcement of religious faith was personal religious experience. And probably a great many of the people who are listening to this program, quite possibly you, know that God is there. You've had a personal and powerful experience of God, perhaps many times. Many others watching me wish they could have such experience. They would like to know for sure that God is there. They would welcome such an experience. And even a few others doubt that there is a possibility for such an experience because they may doubt that there is a God. Not too long ago, a man who watches this program wrote me a letter and he said, "I'm an atheist, but I watch you on EWTN. And I'm not quite as pessimistic about the future of our culture as you are, but I enjoy your programs." And he sent me $25 for our work with the poor. So I'm interested to know that there are atheists watching this program. I wrote back to him and I said, "You know, atheism is a form of belief too. The believer cannot walk out to the end of the sky, pull apart the sky, and say, 'There's God.' And the atheist can't walk to the end of the sky, pull apart the sky, and say, 'There he isn't.' Both have to make some kind of an act of faith. It's all these agnostics around that are causing all the trouble, see? They don't know." Now, I don't expect this program to solve everybody's problems, but let's look in the next 13 programs at different ways we experience God. Now, this is obviously a Catholic Christian radio or television station, so I'm going to talk mostly about the experience of Christ and the ways that we experience Him in our lives. But today, I'd like to just begin with the experience of God. For everybody, the people of any particular religious denomination at all, what is the experience of God? Now, I think it's important that one realizes that the experience of God is almost universal, that it's in every culture, that there is no such thing as a culture without religion. They attempted to make such a culture in Albania during the communist occupation, and they failed completely. Completely, absolutely went under. So let's forget that particular experience, the experience of no God. It doesn't work. One of the people in our culture who had an experience of no God, Jean-Paul Sartre, he toward the end of his life, loudly proclaimed that he had had an experience of God, that he believed in God. 6 months before his death, in his own newspaper, Nouvelle Observateur, the New Observer, said, "The hand that has created me is God." B.F. Skinner, the famous psychologist of operant conditioning, the man who worked with pigeons and told what people were going to do. In the magazine Psychology Today, he admitted that he pretended to be an atheist because he didn't know what to do with God, and that he had returned to the Protestant faith of his youth. He quoted the Bible four times in an article in Psychology Today a few months before his death. Not so long ago, the world heard of the death of the French writer André Froissart. He was for many years a writer, a columnist, in the very famous and popular French newspaper Figaro. And he had belonged, as his father did, to the most left-wing segment of the French Communist Party that eventually became the Maoist French Communist Party. And he one day had to meet a friend, he tells the story. And they rendezvoused at a little chapel in Paris, not to pray, but because it was one of the landmarks there. It was raining, so he went into the chapel. And he described an experience of absolute, transcendent, benevolent light. And 15 or 20 minutes later, he emerged from that church a believing Roman Catholic. He wrote later, he said, "I could not have been more surprised if I went to the Paris Zoo and came out a giraffe." Now, this is the experience of God. These are unusual experiences. But let's get a few things down here. You'll never, ever have an experience of God unless you know something about yourself. Because you are the means by which the divine being or creator can get hold of us. If your inner world, if your mind or your psyche, whatever you want to call it, is all mixed up and fretful and anxious and enraged, you're not going to have the experience. There'd be too much noise going on. The only way you could possibly have it then is if God broke through by some special grace. But let's talk about our ordinary experience, that we are creatures. Somebody has said that human beings are finite creatures sandwiched between two infinite things, the infinitely big and the infinitely small. Let's take a look at the infinitely small. Do you ever look through a microscope and you see all around us there's a whole complicated, gigantic world of microbes and germs and little creatures and mites? And if you look at one of the electronic scanning microscopes, you'll see that on the head of a pin or on the tip of a finger, there's a whole universe of fantastic things. And in the strongest microscopes you see, scanners you see, atomic particles, whole solar systems whirling around. And there are an almost infinite, unmeasurable number of these things just in the makeup of this copy of the Bible, or in this glass of water. You see, all the atoms in this glass of water, it would look like more than all of the planets and suns in the universe. Right around us, there is an infinity of tiny things, an almost infinity. And above us, there is an incredible world. I'm so amazed that people walk around with such little awareness of where they live or who they are. I love at night to go out and look at the stars, look at the sky. It's marvelous. In the stars, you can look up very easily in the winter stars and see a star, Rigel, 900 light years away. And is one of my favorite little stars, Epsilon Aigurei, the Epsilon star in the Chariot constellation. And this little star is 3,000 light years away. A light year is 6,500,000,000 miles, give or take a couple of inches. 6 trillion miles. And you're looking up at this little star, and the light that falls on your eyes began its journey just a little bit after the time of Moses. Then if you're good at it, you know backyard astronomy, you can pick out the star city next to ours, which is the Andromeda Nebula. It's not a star at all. It's a whole world of stars, a galaxy, a star city shaped like two saucers facing each other. We live in one called, by us, the Milky Way Galaxy, and the next one over is the Andromeda Galaxy. It's 100 billion stars. 100 billion. And it's 1,500,000 light years away. 1,500,000 times 6,500,000,000. A large figure. And that's the next galaxy. Where did it come from? Why is it all there? Oh, when I go out at night and I look up and see this, I say the words that are quoted in the Epistle to the Hebrews in chapter 1. They actually come from the 102nd Psalm. I have the Bible here, but I know them by heart from the old Douay Rheims version. Thou, O Lord, didst make the earth, and the work of thy hands is the heavens. They shall perish, but thou shalt continue. They shall grow old as a garment, and as a vesture thou shalt change them, and they shall be changed. But thou, O Lord, art the selfsame forever, and thy years will never end. It is beyond me how anyone can look into a microscope or a telescope and not believe that some unthinkable, mysterious being out of benevolence and goodness called this into existence. And when they tell me its origin, that it all, that whole big universe, began in an object the size of a softball and blew up with incredible heat, and that you and I and all these other planets and stars and galaxies are just part of the debris flying out from that Big Bang. Then I say, who guided it? Who made the firecracker? Who made it blow up? Recently, a scientist published a study on what the first millionth of a second of the Big Bang was like. I don't know how you study this. And he determined that the basic laws of physics were operating in that instant. And he ended his popular report by saying, isn't it consoling to know that the universe was made by a God who's totally consistent? A group of scientists, I understand, recently met to protest the use of theological ideas, which they call superstitions, in science. Now, I will admit, sometimes when science and religion gets mixed up, it's kind of a mess. But what in the world can one do? The greatest scientist of our age, Einstein, often spoke of God and favorably of religion. In fact, favorably of Pope Pius XII, a much maligned man. Now, I ask you to look around. Go out at night with the stars. But most of all, instead of a microscope or a telescope, look at yourself. Who are you? Who is that person that stands behind the mask of our faith? Who is that single being that responds to all different sensations of sight, hearing, sound, smell, taste? Who is the you that goes on, that was you when you were 3 years old and will be you the day you die? Who is that person? In psychology, they speak about the phenomenal self, the you that's thinking about who you are. But who is below that phenomenon? What is that reality? The ancient Greeks and the Apollonian cult had a piece of advice. Know yourself. It's a very, very good piece of advice. Know yourself. And in the Bible, the book of Proverbs, and Ecclesiasticus, the book of wisdom, we are advised, know yourself. If you don't know yourself, you're not going to know God, and you're really not going to know anybody around you. They're all going to be pieces of the drama of your life. Do you ever deal with somebody, you know, I don't really exist to this person. I'm a puppet in their puppet show. Well, such a person is not going to do well with God. If they are religious, it's going to be a God that they made for themselves. No, I think it's terribly important for all of us, no matter what religion you are, to stop, or no religion, and go into yourself. There's a piece of advice in sacred scripture on how to do this. In the Jewish scriptures, God says, be still and know that I am God. Then you can listen to the world around you. I'm a great reader of St. Augustine. In fact, I just published this book on the writings of St. Augustine. The remarkable portrait of St. Augustine on the cover, done by the man who usually does my covers, John Lynch. And this great saint had a marvelous way of putting things. He said, I came out and I said to the earth, are you my God? And she said, no. And I said to all the creatures that live on the earth, are you my God? He said, no, go beyond us. So I went and I spoke to the sky and all the things that live in the sky, the birds, are you my God? And they said, no. And then I looked up and I said to the sun and the moon and the stars, then you must be my God. And they all said, no. And then Augustine says, you have told me about God by your existence. Now tell me something about him. And Augustine said, they all shouted back at me, in a chorus, he made us. He made us. Whoever you are watching this program, listen to what the things of the world say. Some of them are very beautiful. Our Lord Jesus Christ was very, very well aware of their beauty. In Matthew 6:28, in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, look at the lilies of the field. They labor not, neither do they spin. And yet I tell you that Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. The world is beautiful, but it is ugly. It is capable of danger, of destruction, of violence. And so life is mysterious. Whether you're a scientist or a believer or both are filled with mysteries. You want to see a mystery that science can't deal with? What's it called? Gravity. Nobody knows what it is. Does some chain cause that object to fall? Does it pull it there? I'm sitting here surrounded by bright lights. What is light? Nobody knows. What is electricity? What is time? What is time? St. Augustine says, if you don't ask me, I know what it is, but when you ask me, I can't tell you. What is life? The best definitions they seem to have in philosophical biology right now of life is to say that if something doesn't wiggle around and leave little messes after itself, it's a rock. All of these things are mysteries in the natural world. But what stands beyond all that is more mysterious. Many times people do not believe and do not experience God and do not speak to God, do not open their heart to God because they're afraid that they will be confronted by a mystery. We live our lives confronted by mysteries. We are mysteries to ourselves. Don't be afraid of mystery. To be afraid of mystery, to run away from mystery, is to exist and not to live. I love a mystery. It used to be a radio program. And I still say it. I love a mystery. And the greatest mystery of all is the mystery of God. There are a million questions. Ask them. But go silently into yourself and ask them. In his commentary on the 41st Psalm, St. Augustine has this beautiful thing to say. By the way, if you're not familiar with St. Augustine, he was a bishop who had been converted to Christianity from a wild and pagan life and then from something like a New Age cult back in the year 380. He was a bishop for almost 40 years. In Hippawa, North Africa, he wrote several great books, the most famous of which is The Confessions and The City of God. And as I said, I just wrote this book, Augustine Major Writings, which is an introduction to St. Augustine, published by Crossroad. Augustine writes, "Having therefore sought to find my God in visible and corporeal things, and found him not, having sought to find his substance in myself, and found him not, I perceived that God was something beyond me, higher than my soul. And that I might come to him, I thought out these things, and I poured out my soul above myself. When would my soul come to the object above my soul? For if my soul rested in itself, it wouldn't see anything beyond itself. And not seeing itself would not, for all that, come to God." When he speaks about soul, he's speaking about the whole vital inner thing. You know what your soul is. What touches you to the quick. Sometimes we say the heart. And it is the belief of the vast majority of human beings, of all world religions, and even of some of not religions, that this aspect of the human being, this most important and exalted aspect, the heart or the soul, not the physical heart, lasts beyond death, that it is not destroyed. And so Augustine couldn't find himself within himself. And then he cried out to God, "O Lord, make my tears my bread, night and day. I seek my God in every corporeal thing, earthly or heavenly, and I find him not. And I go on wishing to see the invisible things of God from the things that are made. I poured out my soul above myself, and I could not go any longer except by the help of God. For it is in the house of God, his dwelling place, that I find him, above my soul. From there he beholds me, he governs me, he provides for me, he calls to me, he appeals to me, he directs me, he leads me on the way, and he waits for me at the end of the way." At the end of the way, we come to God. Whoever you are, please stop, be humble, say, "God, speak to me." And if you don't believe, pray to him anyway. There was a young couple, they were students in Paris at the Sorbonne, the turn of the century. They were so intent on finding truth that when they couldn't find it philosophically, they decided to make a suicide pact. And the day before they were to kill themselves, in desperation, together, they met this strange philosopher and poet, a believer. His name was Léon Bloy. B-L-O-Y. Bloy was a very great believer, and he said to them, "Go home and pray." They said, "We don't have a God. How can we pray?" He said, "Go home and pray anyway." And they said, "We have no God." He said, "Go home and pray." And they went home and prayed. And they believed. That man became the greatest Christian philosopher of the 20th century, Jacques Maritain. And his wife, Raisa Maritain, became a beautiful spiritual writer. How could that happen? Because they followed the advice. They went home and they did what St. Augustine said to do. They cried out to God from the depths of their being, by no means certain that he existed. And in his benevolence and his mercy, he called to them. He calls to you. He calls to me. He calls to us all, and he gives us the help to listen.